Don't be flippant. This is serious. By Dream, Little Yo. Read by Cookie Mom, 6067. How did you know, Jim? McCoy asks. The only other sound in the office is the irregular beep of some experiment Bones has going in the corner. Know what? Kirk's not trying to be flippant, just evasive. It's an important distinction. Don't be a brat. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Kirk sighs and slouches in his chair, crossing his arms in an almost defensive pose. It's not as if he's ever managed to keep a secret from Bones for more than 2 days. Besides, what's the point of keeping quiet when he's not even sure what he's trying to hide? You mean, how did I know Spock was hurt when he wasn't even on the planet with us? Of course, that's what McCoy means. The mission may have verged on disaster from start to finish, but there aren't many unanswered questions now that everyone is safely back aboard the Enterprise, back where they belong. A little worse for wear in some cases, but no permanent damage done. Kirk is going to call this one a win. You two are great with all that nonverbal bullshit, don't get me wrong, McCoy mutters, arching one eyebrow in a strangely Spock-like manner. But when you're stranded on a hostile planet and your first officer is somewhere in orbit trying not to blow up your ship, you should not be able to tell when he's got a paper cut. Spock suffered a little more than a paper cut keeping the Enterprise in the sky yesterday. He nearly bled out on the bridge. Only a lucky combination of Vulcan stubbornness and Uhura's emergency medical training kept him alive. Kirk doesn't let his mind dwell along those paths. He reminds himself that Spock is stable now, resting, safe and intact, under Nurse Chapel's competent care. Present security doesn't ease the cold knot that accompanies Kirk's memory of the instant Spock was hurt. It doesn't mitigate the inexplicable chill, the rush of adrenaline, the raw knowledge that Spock was dying and Kirk couldn't do a single fucking thing about it. It doesn't explain how Kirk knew. And he shrugs helplessly when he realizes McCoy is still waiting for an answer. I'm not sure what to tell you, Kirk admits. It's not evasion this time, it's just that he knows precisely squat, and that's not a great place to start. These are instincts he couldn't put into words if he tried, tangled up in Spock and defying all attempts at comprehension. Has this happened before? McCoy asks. And Kirk honestly has to stop and think. Has it happened before? He's certainly come to feel an intuitive connection with his second in command. It's been growing gradually over the year and a half they've served together more intensely in recent months. They make a great team. Kirk has never stepped back to wonder if there's more going on than that. Jim, don't take this the wrong way. McCoy levels his most piercing, I'm a doctor, you can trust me expression at Kirk. But what the hell is going on between you and Spock? Nothing, Kirk snaps. Except even as the word leaves his mouth, he finds himself questioning the truth of it. Really? McCoy quirks an eyebrow at him and Kirk glares in return. He hates the dry disbelief Bones manages to pack into one word. And he really hates the obvious skepticism flashing in the doctor's eyes. Like he suspects Kirk of lying and fucking around with his first officer in secret. Or, no, that's too strong. That's not what McCoy's eyebrow is saying. It's a gentler rebuke. McCoy suspects feelings. Maybe an inappropriate fantasy or two, but nothing more than that. Bones, seriously, nothing is going on. And then, because it seems like a relevant point, he adds, you know Vulcans are telepaths. Yeah, touch telepaths. Doesn't really explain much under the circumstances. Kirk glowers and wishes, not for the first time, that Spock weren't so damn cryptic about anything related to his Vulcan heritage. It leaves him with no point of reference for what Bones is intimating. Hell, Kirk's not even sure how to frame the questions McCoy's pointed observations seem to raise. He needs more information. I should probably talk to Spock, he says. The idea is inexplicably terrifying. Yeah, McCoy agrees dryly. You probably should. And because he's got nothing else to offer short of unfounded suppositions and confusion all his own, Kirk stands and takes his leave. He feels the weight of McCoy's curious gaze until the door hisses shut behind him. The end. Continued in part two. In Reserve by Dream Little Yo. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Much as he'd love to, Kirk knows he can't storm straight out of McCoy's office and confront Spock. Even if his first officer is conscious, a fact he can't take for granted considering the severity of Spock's recent injuries, he's still under observation in sickbay. Not the best circumstances for private conversation, and Kirk's gut says this conversation is as private as they come. It's not that he's avoiding the issue. Kirk is many things, but he's no coward. He's not one to put off until tomorrow the awkward conversation he could get over with today. But for all his anxiety, Kirk knows this is neither the time nor the place. His questions can wait. Unfortunately, quiet moments are few and far between aboard the Enterprise. Kirk certainly isn't to blame, not directly, when one wrong moment transitions straight into the next, one after another, until suddenly it's a month later and Kirk is avoiding Bones because he can't bear the pointed looks from his best friend and CMO. Bones doesn't come out and ask, but he doesn't have to. Kirk can read his expressions loud and clear. Have you talked to him yet? He hasn't. But it's not his fault. And it sure as hell not for lack of effort. Last week, he cornered Spock over a game of chess and got as far as, Spock, have you noticed? Before a red alert summoned them to the bridge. When he finally manages to broach the subject, it's in pretty much the worst circumstances imaginable. Among his many other talents, James T. Kirk is the king of bad timing. The gunfire is tapered off, but instead of his security team, Kirk finds himself surrounded by empty corridor. He's about a mile and a half below the surface of this artificial rock that's not a planet at all, not even a little, and Kirk has no idea how he could have gotten separated from his team. They were right behind him a second ago. The fact that they're suddenly not means trouble, especially considering Kirk's not in great shape. His left arm has gone numb, blood staining and saturating the gold fabric of his sleeve. Fuck projectile weapons. Kirk would take a phaser blast over bullets any day. And Bones is going to give him hell for this later, assuming he makes it back to the ship. The way the ground is suddenly tilting doesn't bode well for his prospects. He hopes Spock is having better luck with his directive. Stealing a well-guarded computer core should be cake compared to playing bait, right? Kirk braces himself on the wall with his phaser hand because he can't really do anything with the other arm and turns down a grim corridor to his left. He needs to keep moving. Eventually, Uhura will break through the communications block and call for his coordinates, and then he can get out of here and put this disaster behind him. Except the floor isn't just tilting now, it's spinning so violently Kirk can't stay upright, even with one hand braced beside him. He drops, hard, jarring one knee painfully as he slouches against the wall. He needs to get up. He needs to move. But when he informs his legs of this fact, they don't pay any attention at all. He looks down and startles. All that blood on the floor can't be his. Can it? Fuck, maybe it can. He hears approaching footsteps, so he registers the sound in a detached sort of way. There's a rush of something like noise in the back of his head, growing louder, a sensation both alien and familiar. He chalks it up to blood loss and tries once more to get his legs under him. Again, he fails. He's dead if the enemy finds him. But he might be dead anyway. Stubbornly, with fading strength, he raises his phaser and takes aim down the empty corridor. He drops the weapon when Spock rounds the corner. Not hostiles. Thank God. Spock doesn't look surprised to see him, but the expression on his face, the fact that there is an expression on his face is startling enough, but the dark ferocity in his eyes takes Kirk aback. Jim. Spock crouches beside him and Jim grins, then swallows back a yell of pain when Spock does something to his injured arm. You have lost too much blood, Spock says in a low voice. Spock. Kirk's head is clearing somehow despite the blood loss and fatigue. He feels more awake, more present and steady as Spock fusses with his wounds and checks him over. What the hell are you doing here? Where's the computer core? The core is with Lieutenant Fidel. She is more than capable of completing the mission in my absence. That's reasonable, but it's not enough. It's not an explanation. Kirk catches Spock's hand, stilling the impatient movements, and feels even sharper clarity rouse him. Spock stares, disapproval in his eyes, though he doesn't reclaim his hand as Kirk presses the issue. But why are you here? He's a little turned around, but he's still pretty sure he's nowhere near Central Engineering, which means Spock is way off the scripted path right now. Spock only stares for a moment, deliberately gathering his cool Vulcan reserve around him like a shield. Funny how for once Kirk can see right through it. Probably only seconds pass, but it feels like ages before Spock answers, because you needed me. Spock, come, Spock interrupts, urging Kirk to his feet and supporting Kirk by his uninjured arm. We cannot stay here. I deactivated several sentry drones nearby, but more will arrive soon. Then they're moving, sudden and stilted. And though Kirk's thoughts are clear and the pain has faded to a detached corner of his mind, he can't shake the disorientation that keeps him stumbling over his own feet. Spock is steady against his side, but the corridor is a shifting, sliding chaos. Nausea twists in Kirk's gut, and his head throbs. He doesn't know where his phaser went. He doesn't know where the hell Spock is leading him. It's the next best thing to heaven when a door clangs shut behind them, and Spock helps him settle to the ground. We should be safe here for several minutes. Kirk just nods, grateful when Spock crouches again beside him. He has the irrational urge to take Spock's hand. He wonders if it would make him feel better. Quiet resounds in the tall, narrow space they've found. The lighting is dim and grainy, and Kirk can hear an irregular thrum and thump of machinery close by. Spock, he says, shifting to a position that's not comfortable exactly, but a little less painful. How the hell did you find me? Spock is silent. Kirk takes in his expression and thinks he can't be reading it right. That can't be guilt, he sees, looming in Spock's eyes. Now or never, he thinks, and if his body weren't already flooded with adrenaline, he'd probably feel a kick of it now. He hasn't exactly rehearsed what he's about to say. What's going on with us? He asks finally. Stupid. Not what he means to say at all. It's exactly the sort of imprecise question Spock makes a habit of evading. Clarify, Spock says, which is not a total dodge, actually, and better than Kirk expected. This whole awareness thing. Wasn't Kirk feeling all sorts of mental clarity a few minutes ago? Why can he suddenly not form a single coherent thought? You shouldn't have been able to find me in this stupid labyrinth. And I think I could feel you coming. I could feel something. Fuck, I don't know. His head drops back against the wall with a dull thud. Am I losing it? Spock is quiet a long time. Or maybe it just feels like a long time. Kirk can't actually tell how much time is passing. I was not aware. You could feel my presence that way. Spock says in an impossibly soft voice. Not just your presence, Kirk says, your other stuff too, when you were hurt. You were hurt bad and it felt like shit. He pauses, swallows uncomfortably. I thought you were going to die and I couldn't do a damn thing about it. Another long silence from Spock, and then, you did not tell me you had experienced such effects. Meant to. Should he apologize? He should probably apologize. Instead, he says, been trying to get you alone so I could say something, but there's always another crisis, you know? Yes, Spock agrees. Then, in a strangely hesitant tone, he says, Jim, I must apologize. I seem to have been operating under a faulty premise. What premise is that? Kirk asks. And if the words come out a little slurred, well, at least they're intelligible. I had thought only myself affected by these stimuli. I did not realize you were experiencing them as well, or I would certainly have taken quicker action. Spock, if you don't start making sense, I'm going to fire you and promote Uhura to first officer. Lieutenant Uhura would make an admirable second in command should the position become available. However, you are in no condition to be making such decisions at this time. I'm the captain. I can do what I want. He's confused suddenly. Wasn't he after something specific? Isn't Spock supposed to be telling him something? No, stop distracting me. Explain. He smacks Spock weakly with his good hand. I think perhaps now is not the ideal time for such discourse. Fuck you, Kirk mutters. And fuck discourse. Just tell me what's going on so I can... But of course... That's the moment. A heavy thud echoes from the other side of the door, then a sequence of clanks and scrapes. The heavy portal gives way bit by bit, and Kirk really wishes he still had his phaser. Then there's a crackle of static, and that's Uhura's voice, thank God, coming through, grainy but calm. Spock is holding Kirk's communicator, is saying something, their coordinates. Then there's the whining hum of a transporter locking on, pulling them out just as the door crashes open. Kirk almost vomits from the wave of disorientation. The world pitches violently before steadying enough for him to realize he's on a medical stretcher being maneuvered away from the transporter pad. He catches sight of Spock and grabs his sleeve before the medical staff can wheel him away. We're going to finish this conversation, Kirk says, or tries to say. The words come out like mush, and God, he really does feel like shit. But Spock stays with him as the stretcher is pushed into the corridor towards sickbay. He's still there when McCoy sticks Kirk with something that sends reality crashing away, dragging Kirk into dark, dreamless sleep. The end. Continued in part 3. Press Your Advantage and Never Retreat by Dream Little Yo, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Considering how much luck he's had getting answers so far, Kirk honestly thinks he's going to have to hunt Spock down and force the issue. Not that he thinks Spock will deliberately avoid him. They both know this conversation has waited long enough. But so far, their timing has been so terrible. Every opportunity botched by crisis or circumstance, that Kirk starts bracing himself to show up on Spock's doorstep in the middle of the night and demand they finish this. He doesn't get the chance. The morning Bones discharges him from sickbay, Kirk finds Spock waiting outside his quarters as if somehow he simply knew. Maybe he did. They both know a lot of things they shouldn't lately. Kirk's only greeting is a nod, which Spock returns in kind. The keypad beeps loudly in the empty corridor, and as the door hisses open Kirk gestures Spock into his quarters. "Can I get you anything, Commander?" The door slides closed behind them, and Kirk taps the panel beside it to raise the lights. In the increased brightness, he reads tension in Spock's stance, though he can't be sure he's really seeing it and not simply projecting his own uncertainty onto his first officer's shoulders. He had too much time to think in sickbay, and he's all too aware of his many unanswered questions. "No. Thank you, Captain." Spock stands at stiff attention, and Kirk wants to tell him to ease up. He's making Kirk's quarters seem even more cramped than usual. And spacious as they are compared to the normal crew barracks, they're still more like a couple of large closets than a proper room. Narrow bed along one wall, even narrower couch against the other. Kirk considers his options and finally settles on the edge of his bunk. "Sit," he orders, gesturing in front of him at the empty couch. Most days there would be discarded socks and tomorrow's duty roster and a dozen other things scattered across the piece of furniture, but Kirk had a fit of tidying between the last couple of crises, and he's glad of it now. Somehow it's easier to face down Spock, not to mention his own confusion, in clean quarters. Spock sits stiffly, clasping his hands atop his knees and regarding Kirk with unaccustomed wariness. Apparently, Spock expects him to start this conversation, and Kirk tries not to be resentful. As far as he's concerned, it's Spock's turn this time. But Spock isn't talking, and Kirk scrubs a hand back through his hair and with a sigh, "Fine, where did we leave off?" Kirk's memory is a little blurry. He was bleeding out at the time, but he's pretty sure he's still got the gist of it. "Right, you were going to explain about all this. What was the word you used? Stimuli?" "Yes." There's nothing overtly different about Spock's tone, but Kirk can still tell, and maybe this is just another symptom of their problem, that Spock is deeply discomfited. "So go on," Kirk presses. "Explain." Spock takes his time gathering his thoughts, but Kirk can tell it isn't a stalling tactic. He watches his first officer with a facade of calm, deliberately banking any hint of impatience. Spock's eyes are distant, his posture straight. Eventually, his attention returns to Kirk and his focus is sharp and piercing. "The first time I initiated a mind meld with you was 7 months, 3 weeks, and 4 days ago," Spock informs him. And Kirk can almost see the calculations running in his eyes, the hours, the minutes, maybe even seconds. Precise Vulcan time sense. He doesn't interrupt, and Spock continues. "We have shared 3 separate melds since then, each of them in unconventional circumstances." Kirk nods. He remembers most of them well enough. It's a little alarming how often the Enterprise runs into situations so bizarre Starfleet regulations don't come close to covering them. Mind control, robotic replicas, technology capable of transferring a sentient mind into a completely separate body. He's had Spock in his head enough times it's almost beginning to seem routine. And he wonders if that's where this is going. Is that how Vulcan mind melds work? Repeated exposure leading to crossed wires and a more stubborn connection. It seems unlikely. Surely he'd have heard something if it were a common occurrence. "How much do you remember about the most recent incident?" Spock asks, voice soft and posture losing a fraction of its rigid formality. "Pretty much squat," Kirk admits. "Because that last time, that one's the exception. The time he wasn't conscious, wasn't really there to invite Spock into his mind in the first place. He's grateful as hell that Spock went in anyway. I don't remember anything between getting zapped by the monolith and waking up in sickbay." "You were comatose for 2.5 days. "Yeah, believe it or not, I did read your report," Kirk says it gently, but some of his impatience still bleeds through. There is a point here, and Spock is getting to it. Vulcans don't tend to beat around the bush, but Kirk is still in the dark, and he's getting more sick of it with every passing second. When Dr. McCoy asked me to attempt a mind meld, I was initially hesitant. Advanced medical procedures had already failed to revive you, and I feared that a meld deep enough to recover your consciousness might cause unforeseen harm. But it didn't, Kirk protests. Spock, I'm fine, and I'm grateful. Big fan of not being in a coma, really. I appreciate what you did. Spock arches an eyebrow at him, wordlessly chastising him for interrupting. Which, okay, fair enough. Interrupting isn't getting him answers any faster, but he hates the idea that Spock might feel guilty for coming in to get him. It's a thought Kirk can't abide. My misgivings were not entirely unfounded, Captain. In order to revive you, I had to form a connection far deeper than I intended. The process was invasive, to say the least. It is likely for the best that you have no recollection of the experience. Kirk bites his tongue and resists the urge to interrupt again, forces himself silent as Spock continues. My intention was to sever the link when I terminated the meld. But you didn't, Kirk guesses, starting to understand where this is going. Spock inclines his head in confirmation. I did not realize until later that a connection remained between us, despite my efforts to effect a clean break. That's it? Kirk gapes openly. That's the problem? Spock, why didn't you just tell me? You couldn't have thought I'd be angry. I intended to remedy the situation before it became necessary to trouble you. It did not occur to me that you might already be aware. And if you had realized? I'd have told you from the start, Spock concedes. The point is academic, however. I would soon have had to inform you in any case. My attempts to sever the connection unilaterally have been entirely unsuccessful. You mean it's permanent? Kirk thinks he should be more bothered by the possibility, but he actually feels pretty good about it. The feeling is short-lived as Spock shakes his head in the negative. I mean only that another mind meld will be necessary. You're saying you have to go back into my head to fix this. Indeed. But do you have to? Fix it, I mean. Spock's eyebrow rises again, higher this time, and Kirk scrambles. I'm serious. I mean, okay, maybe it's not always the most convenient. But if it weren't for this connection you're talking about, I'd probably be dead right now. Jim. Spock's tone is even and cool and not even a little bit cajoling. What you are proposing is impractical at best, dangerous at worst. At present, we don't know the nature or depth of the psychic connection I have left open between us. Come on, Spock. I think I'd know if you were damaging me with a telepathic mind probe. As a member of a Psi-Null species, you would almost certainly not. I can feel you, Kirk retorts, sounding more petulant than he wants to admit. His point gives Spock pause, but only for an instant. Captain, he says, and it's enough. Kirk sighs, knowing he couldn't win this debate, even if he understood what they were fighting about. As it is, he has even less room to maneuver and no choice but to concede to the actual telepath in the room. Fine. He pushes up from the edge of his bed and drops onto the couch beside Spock. He lands closer than he means to and turns to face Spock in a resigned slump in his shoulders. Go on, then. Let's get this over with. Spock moves without hesitation, raising one hand to Kirk's face, fingertips pressing firmly in a way that's almost become familiar. Kirk has the barest sense of Spock slipping inside, Spock's mind moving so cautiously Kirk can barely feel him. In all the time Spock has been in his mind, He's never been this careful. And Kirk honestly doesn't know what to make of it. For one thing, he's not sure he should be able to tell that's what Spock is doing. For another, it's disconcerting knowing Spock is rooting around in his brain, but not being able to feel Spock in return. Maybe it's necessary. That doesn't mean Kirk has to like it. Long moments pass, silent and still. Kirk knows Spock is slipping deep and deeper, can feel the rustle of unfamiliar sensation touching him somewhere impossibly intimate. He can't find a word to describe it, though the sensation is vivid and discomforting. Spock's own mind remains guarded, a barely discernible entity, even as Kirk feels himself opened and explored down to his very soul. He wonders if he should feel violated. Telepath or not, Kirk can tell this isn't right. This isn't somewhere anyone should be able to touch him. And he wonders what it means that Spock is there, present and undeniable, and Kirk doesn't mind. He doesn't mind even a little. Closely as Spock has been guarding his own thoughts, his own feelings, Kirk physically jolts when a surge of shocked disbelief ripples through him. Spock withdraws too quickly, still careful but jarring in his absence, and Kirk finds himself gasping as he becomes aware of his body again. He blinks in confusion as Spock's touch falls away from his face. Spock's expression is as smooth and collected as always, but Kirk isn't fooled for a second. "What did you find?" Spock is silent. And for an instant, Kirk glimpses a stunned look flashing behind his eyes. "Spock, what's wrong?" Another beat of silence, and Kirk can't decide if he should be terrified. Spock in his head. Nothing about that felt wrong, and it's hard to imagine Spock found evidence of harm while he was rooting around in there. But Spock still isn't answering, and Kirk can count on one hand the number of times he's seen Spock at a loss for words. "Captain." Spock's voice is steady when he finally speaks. "I apologize. It appears I have made a grievous miscalculation."
"You can't undo it?"
"I cannot. To sever this link will require the intervention of a skilled telepathic intermediary." Spock pauses and Kirk doesn't understand. That can't be guilt he's catching in Spock's eyes, or feeling in his chest for that matter. What can Spock have to feel guilty about?
"Forgive me, Jim. I confess I do not know how this is possible."
"How what is possible?" Frustration bubbles beneath Kirk's skin and he balls his hands into fists, presses them down against his thighs to keep from touching when he shouldn't.
"Spock, talk to me.
You got to give me more to work with here."
"This goes well beyond an inadvertent psychic connection."
Spock breaks eye contact, something he damn well never does, and Kirk stares in open incredulity as Spock continues.
"It is a specific and far more intimate bond."
"Spock."
"Less than a marriage, but more than a betrothal,"
Spock says in a voice that sounds rote and detached. Kirk's mouth snaps shut as the words register and sink in. He knows precisely squat about Vulcan marriages, hard to fathom how marriage works for a people who eschew all emotion. But he's pretty sure Spock didn't mean to propose to him just now. Unfortunately, he's not sure how else to take the words that just came out of Spock's mouth.
"You're saying we're engaged?"
This is the most surreal conversation Kirk has ever had. He's had some weird ones. That time with the vaporous purple ice clouds comes to mind. He's having a tougher time wrapping his head around this one.
"In a sense."
At least Spock is looking at him again, expression bland, but eyes dark.
"We must visit the Vulcan colony as soon as possible."
"Why the rush?" Kirk hedges. despite wiser instincts screaming at him to shut up and agree. He can't see the harm in something that saved his life at least once, or maybe it's got more to do with the fact that having Spock in his head feels all right. Better than all right. Feels like something he could maybe get used to.
Jim.
Spock locks him with a patient but determined look.
Consider what you are saying. You cannot wish for us to remain this way.
Well, no, Kirk says, and pretends it's not a lie. Not forever, anyway. It's not like you're actually asking me to marry you, and I'd shoot you down cold if you tried. I know we'll have to sort this out eventually, but why now?
The bond that subsists between us now is not a static entity. It will neither hold steady nor fade. It will only grow with time and proximity. And there may be other practical considerations.
Like what?
Irrelevant, Spock evades smoothly, as we will remedy the situation before they become an issue.
No way. After the bombshell you just dropped on me, you do not get to go back to not telling me stuff. I'm the captain. There are things I need to know.
Spock at least has the kindness to look apologetic when he says, not this. I'm sorry, Jim. It is not something to be discussed lightly. And once the bond has been severed, it will not matter.
I hate it when you're cryptic.
You will forgive me, as you always do.
Spock knows him too well, and Kirk flops against the back of the couch with a sigh. He won't be able to hold a grudge, and whatever it is Spock is so reluctant to tell him, he won't be able to wheedle it out of his first officer, no matter how hard he tries.
Are we okay? Kirk asks. At least, for now?
Spock barely hesitates before answering.
Yes.
The fact that he doesn't quibble over the definition of okay should be worrying, but Kirk finds he's suddenly too exhausted to care. The end. Continued in part 4. Parallel by Dream Little Yo. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Kirk tries to get the Enterprise to the Vulcan colony like he promised. He honestly, genuinely tries. He even contacts Admiral Komak and gets an official ferrying assignment to see them there. But the Enterprise misses her pickup when a distress signal calls him off course, and then not quite every possible thing goes wrong, but it's close. Hostile ground forces, a communications whiteout. And it's great that Scotty got partial transporter capability back online, but it would have been even better if he'd managed to beam back the entire landing party. Kirk watches Chekov and the security detachment disappear in the bright glow of the transporters, but there is no tingle of displacement to hint that he's about to follow them. He doesn't even need to look to know Spock has also missed the boat. His first officer is still a tangible presence beside him, and Kirk shouldn't be this relieved to have Spock stranded with him. He doesn't have time to wonder if he should feel guilty. Weapons fire sounds close by, and he and Spock run the other way. Directionless retreat out of the cover of deep forest and into the almost blinding rain beyond. Kirk can't see for shit. But Spock seems to be navigating with purpose, and Kirk follows without hesitation. Sometimes he can see the deep, drenched blue of Spock's uniform through the downpour, but mostly he follows the tugging warmth of Spock's presence in his mind, urging him to speed, leading the way. The ground is relatively smooth, at least, flattened by the region's nearly constant precipitation, and it doesn't matter much that he can barely see the path beneath his feet. He notices the abrupt cessation of rain an instant before he realizes that they run into the mouth of an enormous cave. The space arches mind-numbingly high and sprawls so wide it doesn't feel like a cave at all at first. Then they move farther in, and the walls and ceiling veer abruptly inwards, making Kirk feel trapped. He can't hear footsteps behind them, but then he can't hear much of anything over all that rain. A moment later, and a chunk of rock to his left explodes in a burst of weapons fire, proving they haven't evaded their pursuers. Kirk loses track of the next several minutes. Adrenaline-fueled instinct guides his every move as he and Spock rush deeper into the cave, dodging and climbing and maybe even gaining distance on the enemy. Then there's a brighter flash, the roar of a more powerful weapon discharging, and the entire cave echoes with an ominous rumble. "Spock!" Kirk shouts. He tackles his first officer to the ground, narrowly evading the first of the heavy stone deposits to clatter from the ceiling. They scramble quickly beneath a low natural arch that offers protection from the shaking, shuddering chaos around them. The cave roof is collapsing. Fucking perfect. There are screams. Their pursuers have clearly not moved fast enough to dodge the destruction their weapons have caused. Kirk tries to protect his face from the flying dust and pieces of rock, his eyes squeezed shut. Spock's hands find him, clasping his arms with bruising strength. Kirk curses and curls closer to Spock, away from the deafening crash of settling stone. Long after the cave has stopped trying to kill them, Spock informs him that their narrow sanctuary opens into a wider space towards the back. The way they came is impassable, so there's little choice of where to go. The farther they move from the stilled avalanche behind them, the more spacious their surroundings become. They're maneuvering by the pathetic light of emergency torches, but it's enough to watch their footing as they seek sturdier ground. Eventually, Kirk calls stop. This is as safe a space as they're likely to find. And when he shines his light straight up, he can't actually see the cave roof in the beam from his light. The path they've been following, if they can even call it a path, seems to continue a substantial distance ahead before the light can no longer reach it. "At least we won't run out of oxygen," Kirk says. "Indeed," Spock agrees. "Though as we have neither food nor water, the advantage may prove academic." "Have I mentioned recently how much I appreciate your optimism?" Kirk sits as comfortably as he can on the cold stone, leaning his back against a sturdy rock formation. "Anyway, oxygen's all we need. Scotty will figure out how to cut through the atmospheric interference in no time, and then he can beam our asses back to the Enterprise where they belong." "Captain." "I don't want to hear it," Kirk snaps, masking his worry behind the sharp lash of irritation. "Nevertheless," Spock continues blandly, "I must point out that as 6 hours have elapsed without contact from the Enterprise, the window of opportunity for our rescue has effectively closed." "They could still find us," Kirk insists. But his heart can't be in it when he knows Spock is right. "You gave express orders that in the event of..." "I know," Kirk cuts him off. "The rescue mission was a failure, and the Enterprise is long gone by now. They'll make contact with Starfleet as quickly as they can, and then maybe a rescue will be dispatched, or maybe it won't. Those are the tough choices left to Starfleet Command. In any event, even if the Enterprise is authorized to return and mount a rescue, the chances they'll make it back and actually find Captain and First Officer in time is slim. Spock was right. They have no provisions, and there's been no indication of water so far. They're going to die down here." Kirk is glad that for once Spock doesn't cite the odds. "Perhaps if we continue forward, we will be able to find water, at least," Spock suggests. Kirk grins. "Suddenly the optimist, Spock?" "There is a vast difference between optimism and prudence, Captain." But he's already turning away, choosing a direction at random, Kirk suspects, and Kirk follows without complaint. They have to rest eventually. 2 hours of trudging later, they still haven't heard so much as a trickle of water in the distance. "Enough." Kirk drops to the ground, tired more in spirit than in body. Let's just take a break, all right? Just for a few minutes. He'd kill for a tricorder, but Spock was carrying the only one between them, and he wasn't carrying it anymore after the cave-in. Simple deduction what happened there. Very well. Spock sits beside him, nearer than necessary, stiff and cross-legged, beside Kirk's careless sprawl. The silence is disconcerting, complete but for Kirk's own heavy breathing. Spock's breathing is irritatingly silent. At least Kirk doesn't have to ask if his first officer is hurt. He can feel, more clearly than usual, that physically Spock is in perfect health. There's also an undercurrent of emotions Kirk can't decipher, and he decides a distraction is in order. So we're definitely not going to die, he says, brightening his tone with a forced cheer. But since there's sort of a huge chance we will die, I think you owe it to me to finish explaining all the stuff you said I don't need to know. Jim? In the dim torchlight, Spock's brow furrows with genuine confusion. With this bond you put between us. There was other stuff. Stuff you wouldn't tell me. You might as well tell me now. I see no purpose in spending any portion of my remaining hours explicating a topic Vulcans do not discuss with outsiders. Kirk blinks and something tenacious tightens in his chest. Oh, come on, he protests. You have to tell me now. You can't say cryptic shit like that and then shoot me down flat. Spock's subsequent silence is pointed. Come on, Spock, don't be like that. Kirk edges closer so he can nudge Spock with his elbow. You can tell me. Hey, we're Vulcan married, aren't we? It is not a marriage, Spock informs him shortly. Kirk grins at the genuine irritation he's managed to dredge up in his first officer's voice, muted but undeniable. You can still tell me. Spock is silent again. But there's something more considering in his quiet stillness this time. When he speaks, his voice is tinged with something on the very brink of surrender. Do you intend to persist in this line of questioning until one of us succumbs to fatigue or dehydration? Only if you keep saying no. Kirk knows he's won, even before Spock says, "It is intensely personal, Captain." Even among Vulcans, it is discussed only in private, and only between those on the most intimate terms. We're on plenty intimate terms, Kirk points out reasonably. Spock is a permanent presence in Kirk's brain, at least until they find someone who can fix it, and Kirk figures that's about as intimate as it gets. Anyway, who am I going to tell down here? Come on, Spock, tell me about these practical considerations that are none of my business. Spock stifles a sound that Kirk is highly suspicious would have been a sigh, but it's accompanied by a strange mix of irritation and fondness. Kirk stifles an even wider grin and waits expectantly. It is called Ponfar, Spock says in an oddly static voice. The Vulcan drive to mate. It is an unsettling time. Kirk's head is spinning by the time Spock finishes his truncated explanation. Not because what Spock told him is all that weird. Jim Kirk is captain of a starship, for fuck's sake. He eats stranger situations for breakfast most days. This is hardly the oddest biological quirk he's come across since signing on with Starfleet, or the most confusing take on the drive to reproduce, for that matter. But hearing Spock talk in such calm, detached words about something like this, it's surreal, to say the least. It's also making Kirk feel distracted and warm. Only once has Kirk seen Spock with all his controls stripped away, and it was in the worst possible circumstances. This sounds different. Just as awful and terrifying from where a Vulcan is sitting, certainly, but at the same time, Kirk is suddenly thinking thoughts he's never let himself entertain before. Thoughts about his first officer and about the ease with which Spock could overpower him if Kirk actually put up a fight. Thoughts about Spock's hands holding him down, Spock's mouth doing things far more entertaining than citing regulations Kirk will only choose to ignore. Thoughts about what it might be like to have that fire, that loss of control, aimed at him. Not that Spock wants him. Not that Spock would want him, even if Ponfar were taking him apart. But just the same, Kirk suddenly can't think about anything else. "Captain, are you all right?" Spock asks, when Kirk has been silent too long. Kirk is glad for the paltry gleam of their emergency torches. He can't imagine the flush on his cheeks shows in the dim light, though he wonders if Spock has an inkling of what Kirk is thinking anyway. The connection between them has grown stronger with time, just as Spock predicted. Kirk's not picking anything in particular up from Spock right now, but that tells him nothing. He needs to redirect. He needs to shift his brain onto a different track, one less likely to get him in trouble. "Jim." Spock edges closer, clearly uncertain as to the reason for Kirk's silence. "If you have concerns regarding my intentions, I assure you they are unnecessary. Once the bond is severed..."
"No. Hey, no, Spock, I'm not worried."
Kirk forces a smile up from somewhere. "I get it. Soon as you're rid of me, things get back on track. Your time comes, you pick a more appropriate mate. No harm, no foul." But the idea of Spock and appropriate mates calls up a different worry. "Hey." Kirk feels sheepish that the thought is only hitting him now. "This should have occurred to me sooner, but what does Uhura think of this whole mess? The, you know, us being accidentally married or betrothed or whatever this is?" Spock hesitates, and it's only because Kirk knows him so well now that he actually notices. "I have not discussed the situation with her in detail, but her response has been one of support and concern."
"You mean she's not angry?"
Kirk's brow furrows at how very little sense that makes. He may be crap at relationships, whether they're his own or other people's, but he's pretty sure when the Vulcan you love goes and brain marries some other guy, you've got a right to be pissed.
"Why should she be angry? The circumstances do not directly affect her."
Spock sounds so earnest, Kirk can't fathom he's deliberately fucking with his captain's head, but the words make no sense. "Seems like it could be awkward," he hedges uncertainly. "Having your boyfriend propose to someone else, even by accident." This at least gives Spock pause. His expression darkens, then clears, his comprehension eases across his face. "Ah, you are operating under a misapprehension. Nyota and I are no longer romantically involved."
"You're not..."
"What?" "It has been several months since the lieutenant and I decided to redefine the parameters of our relationship."
Kirk needs a minute.
Possibly several minutes to process that information. But at last he guesses. "She dumped you." Spock gives him a perturbed look. "I can assure you the decision was entirely mutual. For some time, our paths had been diverging. It seemed prudent to end things while our interactions remained amicable."
"Vulcans don't lie," Kirk knows.
"Especially this Vulcan. Especially about things that matter. Which means somehow, without Kirk or anyone else on the crew even noticing, Kirk and Uhura called it quits and decided to just be friends. Because they're definitely still friends. Kirk has seen them together in recent months, and if there had been even a hint of distance there, he'd have guessed right away that something was up. It's hard to credit that he could have missed the boat on this one, but it's clearly true."
"Huh."
Kirk shakes his head. "Didn't see that one coming." They've traveled deeper into the cave. By the time Kirk's communicator crackles to life, the signal is faint, but Uhura's voice is still the most incredible thing he's ever heard.
"You're supposed to be long gone, Lieutenant," Kirk says, but he's grinning with relief.
We had a minor malfunction in the warp plasma manifold, she reports in a voice that doesn't even try for convincing. Scotty is confident we'll be able to evacuate the system as soon as we've got both of you back on board. And when might that be? Chekov has almost finished reconfiguring our transporters to cut through the interference. Stand by. The line cuts out, and Kirk shuts his communicator. He's barely containing a relieved bubble of laughter, and he's not surprised when he turns to Spock and finds him as close to smiling as Kirk ever sees him. Optimism, Spock. Spock inclines his head in agreement. When he meets Kirk's eyes again, a more somber edge has crept into his expression. It's not quite enough to stifle Kirk's mirth, but it does make him school his face calm and set a hand on Spock's shoulder. What is it? Captain. Spock sounds strangely hesitant. Regarding our recent conversation. Relax, Spock. Kirk interrupts. His tone is serious now because he understands exactly what's troubling Spock. His first officer will never tell him another secret again if he thinks Kirk isn't taking him seriously. You can trust in my discretion. No one hears a word about it from me. I promise. Thank you. Kirk rises to his feet and extends his hand, but Spock stands up without accepting the assistance. Kirk tells himself Spock simply didn't see the offer in the dim light, even though he knows Spock saw perfectly well. His communicator chirps before he can really stew about it, and Uhura's voice is once again a bright, blessed sound. Whenever you're ready, Captain. Energize. The end. Continued in Part 5. Devil's in the Details by Dream Little Yo. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Spock. Kirk's voice cuts through the sudden silence of the astrometrics lab, trying to interrupt his first officer's determined retreat. Spock, wait! He doesn't mean it to sound like an order, more like a desperate plea, but it comes out somewhere between the two, and Kirk is just grateful Spock listens. Spock hesitates and stills, just short of the door that would take him out of the lab and into the corridor beyond. There will be dozens of crewmen about at this hour, and Kirk knows he could never call Spock out in public. Not about this. But he's got questions. And with Spock no longer actively retreating, Kirk takes a cautious step forward. His senses are sharply focused, though he has little enough data to work with. Spock's back is an unreadable line of tension, and he doesn't acknowledge Kirk's approach. Kirk stops 3 paces away, hesitant to move closer. From Spock's mind, he senses a chaotic jumble of feelings, indecipherable and muffled, behind a protective wall that is clearly intended to keep Kirk out. He can discern no detail, and the lack of information frustrates him. Spock, look at me. Kirk holds himself perfectly still as Spock turns and regards him with a semblance of calm composure. It's an imposing facade. But Kirk knows better. Even if he didn't have a direct line into Spock's head, muted now but still present, Kirk would know his first officer too well to fall for the calculated expression. Are you going to talk to me? Kirk keeps his voice quiet, his hands at his sides. He can't quite prevent his body's instinctive step forward, but that's all right. 2 paces still separate them. And Spock no longer seems a split second from bolting out the door. Because the alternative seems to be me asking dozens of questions and you not telling me squat. And that just hasn't been working for me. Spock hesitates, but he doesn't evade Kirk's eyes. At last, he admits, I am uncertain what to say. Kirk still can't wrap his head around the thought of Spock lost for words. Though it's become an alarmingly frequent occurrence. You kissed me. Kirk honestly can't tell if it's pity or frustration that pulls the statement so bluntly from him, but it needed saying. Spock kissed him. And Kirk is so turned around, he doesn't really know what to say either. which is why they're staring at each other in stupid silence now, nothing but the quiet pings and pips of the lab computers surrounding them. "Why did you kiss me?" Kirk finally asks, praying he doesn't sound disapproving. Because the thing is, Kirk enjoyed it, more than a little. As completely unexpected kisses go, this one was pretty spectacular. Spock's hands on him out of nowhere, grabbing Kirk and dragging him away from the console. Spock backing him against the bulkhead, framing Kirk's face, every touch a command. And Spock's mouth even better than the fantasies Kirk has squirreled away in recent months. But it was also over so fast, he barely had time to master his surprise, let alone respond or reciprocate. And then, Spock can move damn quick when the situation calls for it, so Kirk figures he's justified in asking this question and asking it flat out. Protocol and propriety be damned. He deserves some answers. "Why did you kiss me, Spock?" he repeats, when several seconds elapse without response. He wants to move forward and let himself fall into Spock's orbit. He wants to rewind, go back to the moment when Spock's hands and mouth were on him, and do something about it. "A momentary lapse in judgment, Captain." Spock's words send ice down Kirk's spine, but worse is the moment he continues, "I give you my word, it will not happen again." Then Spock is gone, and Kirk stands in the empty lab, gaping at the closed door and wondering if this is what insanity feels like. The end. Continued in part 6. Incense and Understandings by Dream Little Yo. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Kirk tries to let it go. So Spock kissed him. So Kirk would really like Spock to kiss him again. Neither fact matters in the big scheme of things because Spock is sticking stubbornly to his momentary lapse in judgment. Kirk knows damn well how to accept a rejection, even if Spock does watch him a little too closely these days. He has to go by the words coming out of Spock's mouth, not the tantalizing hints of other things he picks up directly from Spock's brain. Besides, he's the captain. There are lines he doesn't get to cross. Ever since that out-of-nowhere kiss in the lab, Spock has made it an especial point to stay out of Kirk's head. After months living in each other's pockets, after growing accustomed to the familiar pulse of Spock's presence in the back of his mind, the sudden absence feels 100 kinds of wrong. It stings, and Kirk hates this. He should have known better than to let himself rely on that closeness. Kirk's libido makes it even more difficult to maintain the distance he needs. Opportunities for physical intimacy are few and far between for a starship captain, and Kirk can count on one hand the number of times he's gotten laid since taking command. That's a year and a half, and not nearly enough sex for a man of Kirk's proclivities. And suddenly there's Spock messing with his head, pinning Kirk to the bulkhead and kissing him for fuck's sake, then refusing to so much as talk about it. Of course, Spock is the only thing Kirk can think about. He can't win, so he gets back in touch with Admiral Komak. No ferrying assignment this time. Why tempt fate? Komak grants permission to route the Enterprise to the Vulcan colony at the conclusion of their current survey mission, and Kirk is determined that they'll make it this time. Naturally, the mission goes to shit in the home stretch. Their desolate desert moon turns out not to be as barren as they thought. The crystalline life forms that speak up may defy the very concept of life as Starfleet knows it, but they're no less territorial for all that. By the time the Enterprise is safely away, Kirk has forgotten he still needs to inform Spock that their next stop is Vulcan. But then, since when has Spock needed Kirk to tell him what's going on aboard the Enterprise? It's a 2-week journey to the colony. The Enterprise covers half the distance before Spock finds him on the observation deck, empty but for Kirk at this late hour. For all that, daytime on a starship is an arbitrary designation. Gamma shift is a time of empty corridors and the silence of space. Kirk prefers it that way. It gives him time to appreciate his beautiful ship in solitude. He doesn't mind his solitude being interrupted by his first officer coming to stand beside him. Spock positions himself to Kirk's left and follows Kirk's gaze at the viewport. For a moment, they both simply take in the surreal, bending sight of space at warp. Spock's hands are clasped behind his back, his posture stiff, and it's long minutes before he breaks the silence.
"You seem troubled, Captain."
"Do I?"
Kirk, keeping his attention straight ahead, hoping futilely that Spock will drop the subject.
"Yes. For the past several days, your mood has been more guarded than usual."
A barely perceptible pause, and then Spock continues. "The closer we come to the Vulcan colony, the greater your apparent agitation."
"Oh, good." Kirk isn't just showing his hand. He's being completely transparent. He searches for something honest to say that won't broadcast every confused feeling in his chest.
"I'm not looking forward to having some stranger poke around in my head," he admits.
"Jim," Spock admonishes softly, and Kirk sighs.
"Fine."
Looks like this will require a little more honesty than he'd like.
"I guess I've just gotten used to having you in my head. It's going to suck going back to the way things were before."
Spock falls silent, but Kirk can fill in his half of the conversation easily enough from past experience. A dozen completely reasonable arguments about how there is no other choice. This is necessary. They cannot, in fact, allow the bond to remain. Kirk knows all these things. He still doesn't like it.
Spock still doesn't speak as several trudging seconds stretch into a minute and longer, and the lingering silence sets Kirk on edge. Spock has never been one for unnecessary words, but neither is he this uncommunicative. He sought Kirk out tonight, presumably with purpose, and his continued quiet doesn't sit right in the space between them. When Kirk sneaks a glance, he finds his first officer nearly vibrating with tension. He must deliberately be guarding himself to keep Kirk from sensing his unease through the bond. But Kirk doesn't need the bond to show him the obvious tightness of Spock's posture. Even at attention, Spock never stands as rigidly as this.
"Are you all right?" Kirk asks in a soft, cautious voice.
Spock doesn't answer, and Kirk abruptly remembers that Vulcans don't lie. Clearly they, or maybe it's just Spock, prefer tense silence to straight answers, though.
"Terrific. Spock, if you're having second thoughts..."
Kirk trails off, unsure how he intends to finish this thought. He's unsurprised when once again Spock offers nothing, but frustration mounts tightly in his chest just the same. Eventually, Kirk turns his back on the viewport. He deliberately doesn't look at his first officer.
"If there's nothing else," he starts.
He doesn't get to finish the sentence, startled instead by sudden movement. A strong hand closes tightly around his bicep, jerking him to a stop. Kirk turns and stares at Spock. He finds dark eyes drilling into him, wide and fierce and almost surprised, as though Spock is as startled to find himself holding onto Kirk as Kirk was to be grabbed in the first place.
"Spock, what..."
Kirk begins to ask, but his throat closes tightly at the sudden surge of emotion that reaches him through the bond. An unguarded moment. Physical contact overriding Spock's careful walls, and Kirk draws a quick, sharp breath at the unexpected heat in Spock's mind. Heat and other things. Complicated things. Fierce denial. Hot frustration. And deeper down, something roiling and confused. A territorial hunger that Kirk can barely fathom coming from Spock. But it must be coming from Spock. Kirk may be suffering his own confusion of emotions, but he doesn't feel territorial about Spock. Eager, yes. Desperate, maybe. But
territorial. That one's not on him. Christ, after that kiss in astrometrics, he'd known Spock must be interested. But this is miles beyond even Kirk's most ridiculous fantasies. This is an intensity that leaves him stunned and winded. He should be terrified at the depth of Spock's feeling. Somehow he's not. He's never had much use for self-preservation, anyway. Before he can say a word, let alone conjure up a coherent thought, Spock releases him. The shields fly up between them so fast Kirk is suddenly dizzy. The two men stare at each other, Kirk gaping, Spock inscrutable. Kirk opens his mouth, no idea what he's going to say, but curious to find out. The chirp of the communications panel on the wall interrupts him, and Chekhov's voice sounds bright and clear. Bridge to Captain Kirk. Kirk keeps his eyes on Spock for an extra beat, but they both know he can't ignore a direct summons. He clenches his jaw as he turns and makes his way to the panel on the far wall. It's a distress signal. Kirk orders an intercept course and Spock follows him to the bridge. When the red alert klaxons have faded, Kirk is reluctant to resume their previous course. The Vulcan colony is the last place he wants to go right now. Hell, he's even more reluctant than he was before, turned around by the sudden revelation of just how little he and Spock have been understanding each other. Now that the ship is quiet, Kirk's brain jumps straight back to their unfinished conversation and the look in Spock's eyes on an otherwise empty observation deck. Fuck it. Kirk is done being reasonable and responsible about this. Those traits have always been more Spock's purview than his, and even Spock is falling somewhere short of the mark. Scotty pages the bridge, something about damage to one of the warp subsystems, and Kirk orders a full stop. He tells Scotty to make the necessary repairs, tells Sulu to park it in the meantime. Then he turns in his chair towards the science console behind him. He turns and finds Spock watching him with a perplexed expression, one eyebrow sailing high. Kirk holds eye contact a beat too long, a pointed stare that must communicate his purpose. When he stands and strides towards the turbolift, Spock rises wordlessly and follows. Neither of them speaks as they navigate the Enterprise's not quite empty corridors. Somehow, by mutual understanding, they reach the door to Spock's quarters. Kirk won't admit to knowing Spock's code, any more than Spock is likely to admit he could break into Kirk's room as easily as breathing. And so he waits for Spock to unlock the door, then follows him inside. The lights rise automatically as the door seals behind them, and Kirk realizes it's been months since he set foot in this room. He'd forgotten the surprising warmth of Spock's quarters, several degrees higher than ship standard. The air carries the distinct aroma of the incense Spock burns for meditation, and Kirk breathes deeply, finding reassurance in the familiar scent. It's a pleasant odor, crisp and sweet, and it goes a long way towards settling Kirk's nerves. Though he has no reason to expect Spock will speak first, he's still disappointed when his first officer lets the silence stretch awkwardly between them. Spock's reticence leaves Kirk to call out the stalemate they've reached. Kirk hates finding words for complicated feelings. He has enough trouble expressing the simple ones. Finally, he sighs and crosses his arms. He leans a hip against Spock's desk as he meets the Vulcan's eyes across the room. Enough, he says in a tired voice. This is getting ridiculous. Spock inclines his head, acquiescence, if not agreement. Kirk inhales slowly. He runs a hand through his hair. He braces himself, searches for a dignified way to say what he needs to, and comes up blank. When he finally gets the words out, they come with neither tact nor preamble. I'm pretty sure the only way for us to get our heads on straight is to have sex. There are plenty of reasons. What he's suggesting is a terrible idea. But there are even more reasons. It's the most excellent, practical, and perfect idea he's ever had. The glimpse into Spock's head told Kirk everything he needed to know, and more. There's tension twining between them, winding them tighter and tighter. And unless they do something about it, they're liable to tear each other apart. Kirk doesn't get to voice any of his perfectly coherent reasoning before Spock disagrees. Such action on our parts would be inadvisable, Captain. Why? Kirk asks, then clenches his jaw to keep from calling Spock out on the use of his title instead of his name, of all the times to be Captain instead of Jim. If we were to engage in sexual intercourse, Spock says, derailing the irate train of Kirk's thoughts, the bond between us would likely become permanent. Kirk gapes. When no further explanation proves forthcoming, he says, "When you say permanent," even the most skilled mental healer would no longer be able to sever the connection that subsists between our minds. That sounds pretty good, actually, though Kirk is surprised to find himself thinking this way. For all his reluctance to sever the bond, this is 100 times more important. Something bright and sharp ignites in his chest at the idea that maybe, if he plays his cards just right, he won't have to give Spock up after all. "We should have sex anyway," Kirk announces. "I think you are misapprehending." "No, pretty sure I apprehend perfectly," Kirk interrupts stubbornly. "What you are suggesting is the best idea I've ever had." Second or third best idea, maybe. Joining Starfleet was pretty brilliant, and saving Earth wasn't his worst choice ever. But sex with Spock is right up there on the list. Kirk is still apprehensive of rejection. There's every possibility Spock will shoot him down cold and kick him out. Despite Kirk's protests, he's all too aware that there is little chance of this conversation actually ending in sex with Spock. He's being an illogical, ridiculous human. And now is the time for Spock to call him out. Maybe he'll remind Kirk about that whole Ponfar thing they don't ever talk about. Maybe he'll set messy emotions aside in favor of cool Vulcan reason and thank Kirk for his offer while pointing out that the last thing Spock wants is to be bonded for life to a manic, irrational human being with a penchant for nearly getting himself killed. Christ, this is going to be the worst conversation Kirk has ever had. He squares his shoulders and braces himself for the inevitable rebuke. He continues to hold himself tense as Spock crosses the small distance separating them. He tries to guard his expression as Spock regards him with dark, serious eyes. The last thing he needs is to let on how desperately he wants Spock to touch him. Then Spock reaches for him with one hand, fingers sliding back into Kirk's hair, curling around the nape of his neck. He tugs, and Kirk is confused, then shocked, then melting, because suddenly Spock is kissing him, rough and greedy, pinning Kirk hard against the edge of the desk. Fuck, Spock is kissing him. Kirk promised himself he wouldn't be caught useless and frozen again, and this time he opens immediately for Spock's tongue. He spreads his legs to let Spock slide closer against him. He reaches for Spock, fisting his fingers in blue uniform and pulling him nearer still. Spock is impossible heat along his front, free hand curling over Kirk's hip and holding on with bruising strength. When the kiss ends, Kirk is breathing hard. Spock is more controlled and manages to sound completely calm when he says, "Your argument has merit." Kirk drags him back down into a second kiss and without a word offers his wholehearted agreement. The end.